trapped. Trapped in self-destructive ways of living, captive to fear, mired in ways of living that prevent us from being fully alive. We have all lived through such periods in our lives. So we know in our bones that there is a vast difference between just living and being truly, vibrantly alive. To genuinely appreciate this truth is to come to a profound insight. In biological terms, life is a binary matter, akin to a simple on-off switch. There are only two options. You are either alive or dead. Unlike in the movie The Princess Bride, you cannot be mostly dead. But when it comes to being fully alive, we are all on dimmer switches. The inner life, the inner light within us might be turned down quite low, barely flickering, or we might be burning brightly. Here, quite possibly, and quite sadly, one can be mostly dead. The troubling thing is how often we think that religion is really about the on-off switch and not about the dimmer switch. Christians routinely give the impression to the rest of the world that religious life is about denying death or escaping it altogether. Why? Because we seem to believe that we will have more life later, after the final curtain falls, which of course means that it isn't the final curtain at all. Gospel passages like the one we just heard risk further cementing that impression. Jesus comes to grant us an all-access pass to the afterlife, but in the good place, not the pit. Is that what Christian life is really about? But John, you might say, isn't that what today's passage quite explicitly said? And I quote, Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Jesus is promising us life after death, isn't he? Yes, he is. Christian faith is deeply rooted in the conviction that death is not the last word. The God who gives life, the God who is life, cannot be defeated by death. But to affirm that death is not the last word does not mean that we get to wish it away or pretend it does not exist. Nor is it accurate to imagine that the promise of resurrection means that we have an infinitely extended quantity of time to come post-mortem. Such simplistic views of resurrection run several risks. First, they might lead us to trivialize this life and say that it does not matter, that the real nitty-gritty concerns of this life, justice, the climate crisis, or just taking care of each other, all these are but ephemeral concerns. Why? Because for Christians, true life begins later in the sweet by and by. I think not. A second danger, this way of thinking about the afterlife leads to absurdities, visions of life without end that seem utterly monotonous, endless harp playing on celestial clouds. Whatever it means to say that death is not the last word, it cannot mean that we just have more life later. I don't think it's about quantity. If that were true, if death were nothing but a fleeting interruption, then our gospel leaves us with a perplexing and irresolvable puzzle. Why does Jesus weep? Didn't we just hear him say, I am the resurrection and the life? Did he not just proclaim that all who believe in him will never die? Then why weep? Was he just caught up in the moment, grieving in sympathy with other mourners? Is his grief for us that we grieve over what we ought not to grieve for? If Jesus knows that death is but an entryway into eternity, a door he can open at any time, then why does our Master weep? This query about Jesus' tears is no small matter. In John's time, it was a risky proposition to depict a religious hero in tears. Why? Some of the leading philosophers of the age, the Stoics in particular, regarded weeping as a sign that the mourner lacks wisdom. Of course, true weeping is quite natural and human, but the wise overcome it as they mature into clear-minded living. The wise person does not grieve over the inevitable, what is just in the nature of things. And given that we are finite beings, why grieve when death comes as it must? If you know that ideas like that are common currency in the Greco-Roman world, then why run the risk of depicting Jesus as weeping? It seems safe to suppose that John, the gospel writer, and John's community do not regard grief as a mark of folly. Even if Stoic ideas are present in the gospel, and they are, John rejects the core notion that grief is misguided. We do no wrong when we weep. But there is a second and even deeper truth here. Jesus' tears suggest that death is a very real business, even for the one who is the resurrection and the life. Nothing about Jesus' tears suggests that we ought to dismiss death as a trivial interruption, an insignificant hiatus between a lesser life now and a greater life to come. Death is real. Death is painful. Death matters. And if death matters, then life matters. Nothing about Jesus' tears nor his life suggests that he wants his followers to regard this life as a mere way station to real life later. Life, here and now, is a serious matter for Jesus. He cares that we do not just pass through life treating this world as a way station or as an unreal illusion. On the contrary, Jesus makes it clear that he is not here to grant us that all-access pass to the hereafter, but for another reason entirely. As he said, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. Abundant life, not just longer life. Quality of life, not quantity. Not more life later, but deeper life now. Not the on-off switch, but the dimmer switch. That is what Jesus cares about most. By his own words, we know that Jesus is here to teach us how to live in a way that turns the dimmer switch as far up as possible. And the truth is, there is no maximum setting on that dimmer switch, but that's a sermon for another day. When it comes to quality of life, there is no highest setting, because God, who is abundant life, is infinite. For this evening, let us just take a moment more to ask, what is the key that opens the door not just to endless life later, but abundant life now. Our reading provides the answer. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." See how he loved him. For Christians, loving maximally, that is the key to understanding the dimmer switch. The more we love, the more brightly we burn. To be truly alive, it is not enough that God grant us quantity of life. We must be unbound like Lazarus, unbound from whatever fears, whatever heartbreak, whatever woundedness, whatever it is that keeps us guarded and closed off from loving fiercely and well. And this we must also do for each other. It might well be that Jesus gave Lazarus new life, but then he asks those around him to unbind Lazarus and set him free. That remains our work for each other. Yes, that work runs the risk of vulnerability, of pain, and yes, of tears. But poor is the soul that is afraid to love because it is afraid to cry. Lord, save me from an arid love that is afraid to weep. This precious life we share with each other matters, and because it matters, it is worthy of our costly grief. So then, dear siblings, let us love this fragile world and each other's mortal bodies with fearless and vulnerable boldness, so that they may say of us what they said of our Master. See how much these Christians love this fragile, broken, and beautiful world. See how much they love this life.